this is our first actual recording, isn't it? We went to the demo.
Yes, and who can remember the name of the studio?
SWM Studio?
SWM, SW something, certainly sounds...
It was in Clerkenwell Road.
It was... Was it? It was off of Clerkenwell Road. It's called Berry Street.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I went back there several times when it was in several different states.
Yeah.
Over several years after that, it was a fantastic multi-track at one point.
Was it? Because it was only four tracks.
It was either four or eight, but it was Brennell. It was very beautiful tape machines.
And of course, we had a saxophone player.
We had Mr. Monaghan.
Who?
We did. About whom we can say.
What can you say about Mr. Monaghan?
Who says? Well, this is I'll read exactly what it says. The only member of the group not educated at Dulwich College. He was born in Newcastle on Tyne in 1945. I didn't know he was a Geordie.
I didn't know either.
Joined the army as a musician a decade ago and bought his way out recently after a win on the National Spastics League. Now, there's something else that you don't know about, do you? That is incredible. A devotee of Big Spidermech and Charlie Parker, he was first impelled to play by hearing Django Reinhardt. Also counting Berlioz, Bartok and Gershwin among his musical mentors. Now, with 10 years' experience as a flautist, he has played in local jazz clubs, taking alto 3 years ago, and doubling on guitar. I didn't know that. For the future, he wants to play everything as often as possible.
So, he didn't last very long, did he?
That sounds like a very good idea.
Well, basically, because we haven't got any money and we couldn't pay him, he couldn't afford to stay with us.
Oh, is that what it was?
Broadly,
it
wasn't it? Okay. Whereas we all lived at home and therefore had our parents to sponge off.
I think that's probably got a certain sort of ring of economic truth about it.
Dave Jarrett was in the band.
Dave Jarrett. Yeah. Dave Jarrett. The elderly Dave Jarrett. Yes. Because he was five years. You're my senior, and so probably several decades. Charles is senior.
Yeah, absolutely. So he must be about what? 150 now.
Yes. He's 64.
So years of the quiet. So that's what was. That's the extra track.
That's the first extra track recorded on four track in some.
And then we never re-recorded it again. This was our second time in a studio. What can you remember about that?
It was less well provisioned than SWM.
Oh. It wasn't a proper studio.
It was one of those more like transferring off one TAC onto another TAC and adding an overdub sort of situations.
Yeah. Right, so what, four-track or two-track TAC?
Two stereo reel-to-reels talking to each other with overdubs.
And it was an old, I don't know, Georgian building out in the country, wasn't it? So none of the rooms, I remember the vocals we did on the hall, which had stone floors and echo, so it's like a little natural echo chamber.
That's why you can hear that echo.
Still didn't improve the quality of the vocals in any way at all. But so the rooms were not proper studios. As a result, what came out was.
And the drums. Can you remember where you recorded the drums? Was it in? Did we all play in a room like sort of an empty living room? I'm trying to remember.
It was something like a room with lots of carpets on the walls and all that depressing sort of stuff.
Yeah. Sort of hippie commune.
It was not so much get your head together.
But they were definitely hippies. Take it from me, I know.
Yeah?
They were hippies.
He's a man who's worked with Gong. He knows a hippie when he says
I know
that.
A hippie
you
when
work
I see
with Gong.
I work with Gong. I know
so it's
what.
Like sort of English Gong type
yeah,
scenario.
They were in the band called High Tide, which was a very nice band.
Oh, yes, really? High Tide with
Violin Simon, who later went on to work with Bowie on Lodger. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were one of the unrecognised British late 60s, early 70s bands.
Yeah.
High Tide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Andy and... And there was another guy who I met when I came up to London. I mean, when I came up to England. Yeah. When we returned to London.
Yeah.
Then I maintained a certain sort of contact with them. I don't know how. I don't know why, other than the music, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I went to their place and we rehearsed a bit and all the rest of it. And there was another guy who was also in High Tide. Yeah, basically, it was like they were...
Oh, it was there.
They were the remains of High Tide regrouping and getting themselves back together again.
And they got some money from Warner's for us to go down there.
Yeah, and then that fell through after 6 months after we left. That whole thing collapsed again.
Right. And so this the version that's on there of RFD is what we recorded there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's our second...
I can't remember too clearly what it sounds like, but I suspect it sounds even more rough and ready and sonic quality than the original.
So finally, the other version of RFD that we've got here, which is RFD, the intro, is it? Or the bit with the piano that we're going to have on the...
It's the band bit that we didn't use. I mean, we used the tinkly bits, but the bit that we didn't put on the original mainstream album was the whole band.
The whole band. Now, we ended up doing that album years later, though.
74, 75. December, January 74,
75. Yeah. And why didn't we include that version of RFD?
Because there wasn't enough space, I think, vinyl.
Well, we just didn't play it well enough either, because it's all in 7, except there's one bar in 6, for instance.
Right.
And we never got that bit right.
Mathematicians write things like that, I don't know.
I'm writing one bar in 6.
That's silly.
Yeah, perverse, really.
It is, isn't it, really?
Really, it's a bar of 13. Why doesn't it just...
Yeah, exactly. Now it makes sense.
See, but the 7...
If we'd worked that out.
If we'd known that then. If we knew now, then what?
And so... 5 years after we, in effect, 4 to 5 years after we'd stopped playing, we actually went in and did the Quiet Sound album at Basing Street. On the sly, I seem to remember, because I hadn't told EG that we were doing two...
Yeah, we came in after you finished your Diamond Head sessions, didn't we? So we sort of worked either side of midnight, basically.
Exactly. And actually, I went to look at some of the 2-inch tapes, and I noticed that they've got, you know, both albums on them.
Brilliant.
It goes, you know, Diamond Head and then Quiet Sound. And we managed to sort of slip that in without them noticing, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because the funny thing was that the studio manager there, what's his name? Studio manager at Basing Street was one of the guys who rejected the Quiet Sound album.
Oh, Muff Winwood.
Who was the nastiest.
Yeah,
and terms of his response.
And, the wonderful thing is that under his nose, without him realising, we were recording the album. He probably used to go home at about 6 o'clock, and we used to then nip down to the other studio and get on recording the Quiet Sound album, which he had rejected.
Yeah.
And then I remember a delightful moment years later when it came out, and it was like Record of the Month in Melody Maker, taking the review. I think, did you come with me? We went round to his office and said, remember this? There was the
gratuitously insulting letter.
Letter.
Was, in fact.
That's your name on it. By this stage, we got to know him quite later. So, see this? This is a fantastic review for Melody Maker.
Absolutely.
Yes. Goodbye.